When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast. It's SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation joins us. So here we go. Here we go. We've been waiting for 8 years to see how the Republicans would come to the rescue on health care. Because as you know, John, Obamacare is collapsing and we have to do something, and we have to do something right now. So in order to put this fire out, we need to bring blowtorches and gasoline, right?
Apparently, although actually the weird thing is, I'll differ with you on one element of that, the blowtorches and gasoline suggestion. This isn't really quite that. I've got another image of it for you.
Okay.
And that is that let's say you had a house and you lived in that house and I came and kicked you out of that house and gave that house to somebody else. So I didn't tear it down. I didn't destroy it. I just redistributed it.
You will take my Lustron home from my cold, dead hands, mister.
I think that Paul Ryan would, don't make that suggestion. But here's the deal, and this is the way to understand it. Our right-wing friends are correct. This is a continuation of the infrastructure of Obamacare. The only difference is that as flawed as Obamacare may have been, it tried to get care to lower income people, and there was at least some infrastructure within it to try and get people who had more, were able to pay more, to pay more, and people who needed help to get it. You know, there was some decent structure in that regard. It was imperfect, but at least in some ways, morally acceptable. What this new plan does is sort of reverse the equation. It says, well, we've got this infrastructure in place to organize how healthcare is paid for, at least to some extent, to collect money, to direct money in other ways. Why don't we use it to give more money to rich people to help the wealthy and big corporations? So you see, they're not really destroying it. They're just sort of reversing the order of things. And that ultimately...
I guess the reason I use the analogy I did is that with a healthcare crisis in the country, that isn't just going to raise premiums for poor people. That's going to raise premiums for everyone.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. No, there's no doubt. The only people that come out ahead in this plan, again, reasonable people could criticize the Affordable Care Act. There are reasonable critiques to be made of it. But what this plan does is take a lot of what was good about the Affordable Care Act and turn it against itself. And so now you create a situation where the most powerful insurance companies, the wealthiest people, those who profit the most off healthcare, will be freed to open up all sorts of new avenues for profiteering. And ultimately, they will make healthcare dramatically more expensive, unreliable, inefficient. And the weird part of it is, like, that while this will be damaging to many low-income people, many of the people who get hit hardest by it will be the older folks
mm-hmm.
who supported Trump.
Oh,
not all. Without, not all.
Without a doubt. Yeah, and it's interesting because this montage was played on NBC yesterday.
Obamacare is nothing more than the largest tax increase in the history of the world.
Many Democrats had recently come out against Obamacare, saying specifically they understood now about the death panels and other things.
Obamacare is really, I think, the worst thing that has happened in this nation since slavery.
Yeah, he shouldn't talk about slavery. That's not a good issue for him.
It never works.
No. He especially should stay away from slavery.
No, it's just that he actually ought to be the one or one of the people who, you know, might bring these concerns to a head. But it's just that every time he does, he ends up saying things that are so atrocious.
Oh, it is entertaining.
So unsettling.
It is entertaining. All right, this is from David Muir's interview with Donald Trump right after he took over in the White House.
Told the Washington Post that your plan to replace Obamacare will include insurance for everybody. That sounds an awful lot like universal coverage.
It's going to be what my plan is that I want to take care of everybody. I'm not going to leave the lower 20% that can't afford insurance.
Oh, that is unfortunate.
He's not going to do that, but Paul Ryan will.
Right.
You know, that's the weird part about it. What has happened here is that Donald Trump, who, by the way, had about, 12, 15 different stands on health care during the campaign, but who, if you kind of go to the heart of the matter, appeared to be sympathetic to some sort of European style, if not single payer, at least, you know, planned and structured healthcare system. One that, you know, used either general revenues or some healthcare system structure to make sure that those who were the poorest, the sickest, the most vulnerable would be cared for. It was actually one of the best things about Donald Trump during the campaign. I mean, he clearly hadn't thought it through very much, but his instinctual response, if you looked at especially the early debates, was to be quite sympathetic.
Well, when he was a liberal, he supported universal health care.
Single payer, I think.
You're right.
And so, but here's the interesting thing. He knew enough from listening to the discourse there was an objection within the Republican Party. By the way, polling will tell you that this objection is dwindling across the board very rapidly. But there was an objection to Obamacare. And it was very unpopular within the Republican Party, not the actual structures of the plan so much as, you know, just by the name. And so he knew enough to say he was opposed to it. But yet his opposition was not so radically opposed to it, at least is not opposed to many of the elements thereof. He got into power. He clearly hadn't thought about it much. The evidence is he still hasn't thought about it much.
He was more focused on important things like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Or wiretapping Trump Tower.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the interesting thing. It does look like he outsourced the plan to Ryan. And Paul Ryan, who has always desperately wanted to create a healthcare plan that uses the federal government as a sort of a bagman for the insurance industry, i.e., you know, pulls revenues in and sets up structures that are designed to enrich healthcare executives and investors, i.e. the people who contribute to his campaigns. He's desperately wanted to do that for a long time. That's never been a secret. And Trump gave it to him. Now, what's remarkable is that historically, even Republicans didn't want to give Paul Ryan that power. But Trump has done it, I think, out of his ignorance.
All right, so this was quite a mishap, quite a terrible launch yesterday. You've got the Freedom Caucus revved up. You've got senators like Murkowski and Portman and Shelley Moore Capito that are all saying, "Yeah, wait a minute. We expanded Medicare in our states. You can't cut our Medicare." And yet Paul Ryan is saying they have got their ducks in a row and they're going to pass this.
And get the 218. Here's the interesting thing. I think that this is finished. I think we're done with this. And the reason I think we're done with it.
What do you mean we're done with it?
In this form, I don't think it's going to happen, is that don't look at members of Congress. Look at what the people who essentially fund primaries are saying. Where does the Club for Growth stand on this? They don't like it. You know, where do the Heritage folks stand on this? They don't like it.
You are shaking my belief that we have a democratic system where people go to Washington like Mr. Smith and, my God, they operate individually for freedom. Are you telling me? What? You telling me that outside organizations would be able to put the kibosh on something like this?
I think they already have.
I feel very, very sad.
I hate to tell you this, Sly, but when you saw where these interest groups started to line up almost immediately, very confidently, very aggressively in opposition to this, that strengthens not just the Freedom Caucus, but those more moderate members of the Republican caucus who just aren't comfortable with this. And remember, here's the interesting thing, Sly. Often, you and I would disagree passionately with Justin Amash or some of the other, you know, very libertarian members. But many of your more libertarian Republicans actually are against crony capitalism. They don't like the idea of using government to collect money or to regulate in a way that is designed to enrich campaign contributors. And there are other folks who, you know, obviously aren't so concerned in that regard. But there's enough of a libertarian Republican funding base in combination with these members that it's a huge problem. And I can tell you right now that I think you will have a sufficient number of Democratic votes in opposition to a crony capitalist corrupt reform, which this is. And you will have a significant number of Republicans operating on principle, in some cases, on concern for their state and others and self-interest in others. But that combination, I think, is going to isolate Ryan and Trump. Although I will tell you that Trump has invited the Freedom Caucus to bowl with him at the White House.
Oh, they're going to go bowling.
Yeah. I think in like a day or so they're going bowling.
Oh, sure. Sure.
And that ought to settle it.
That'll be that's a nice white sport.
It's not. Now, that's unfair. that is not true. There's definite multi-ethnic and multi-racial appreciation of, as we like to refer to bowling in the Milwaukee area, the sport of kings.
John Nichols with us at SlysOffice.com. All right, let's talk about the other thing that's going on right now. And this is this Donald Trump making a mess for himself and his staff. Here's what former CIA Director Michael Hayden said about Donald Trump.
He's trying to distract attention from what was a very, very bad news cycle. And let me go very, very dark on you, Mika, all right? The President of the United States put his own reputation, the reputation of his predecessor, and the reputation of his nation at risk to get at least a draw out of the next 24-hour news.
That's not very complimentary.
Oof. You know, and if Hayden was saying that on his own, right, if he was the only one saying it,
mm-hmm.
That might, you know, you might say, well, I don't know. It seems pretty, a little speculative. But you do realize that pretty much everybody else that knows about this stuff
mm-hmm.
is saying the same thing. And you're the only person who's not, which is the weirdest thing. I will argue, I'm going to put forward my view, that the weirdest thing that happened on television in the last 3 days, two or three days, was Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly appearing with Wolf Blitzer on CNN to talk about this stuff. And so Blitzer asks him about it, right? You know, and remember, the president has essentially not just asserted that Obama ordered wiretapping, but that Obama committed crimes, right? That this is, in Trump's tweets, he talked about, you know, legal remedies and, you know, what a lawyer could do on this, et cetera. So John Kelly, as a guy who's majorly involved in the national security apparatus of the country, running Homeland Security, a respected retired general, he's asked about this, and he says, I don't know anything about it, okay? Now, that's the right response. That's a perfect response. You just go right on to the next topic. But then he volunteers, and I'll read you what he said. If the President of the United States said that, he's got his reasons to say it. He must have some convincing evidence that this took place. I don't pretend to even guess as to what the motivation may have been for the previous administration to do something like that. So it's not just Trump now. It's the Secretary of Homeland Security, and then I'll repeat that, for the previous administration to do something like that. He's saying he has no evidence, he doesn't know anything about it, but he is asserting that Obama did it. And it's bizarre. I mean, that's, I know, I understand loyalty to your boss, but, I mean, I think Kelly went to some incredibly weird place. And the key to that is his acknowledgement that there's no evidence and he knows nothing about it. He's just putting his confidence in Trump. And
well, the truth is that Donald Trump could find out in 2 seconds whether it happened.
Oh, I realize. Yeah.
Here's Malcolm Nance. Go ahead.
That, by the way, John Kelly, who says, I don't know anything about it, should be in meetings where he should find out about this.
You would think. Here is Malcolm Nance on MSNBC last night on the 11th hour with Brian Williams.
You know, I've been in this business a very long time. I worked in operations which could have resulted in FISA warrants on American citizens and have resulted in FISA warrants on people who were involved with foreign intelligence agencies. It's a very difficult process. This isn't something you can just think up off the top of your head. And the President of the United States cannot order it to happen, because there is a deep chain, certainly amongst just the lawyers and general counsels amongst the intelligence agency. This does not happen in a vacuum. It's not like in the Hollywood movies where you just point to a person and they will loyally go out and do that. I mean, if someone had ever asked me to do this as a private citizen or a retiree to come in and just go and wiretap somebody, I'd say thanks for the offer, but I'm going over to Justice Department right now to turn you in. So with regards to Donald Trump, if I could just make one observation, I'm sorry, but it needs to be said now and here. Donald Trump is a pathological liar. There's virtually nothing that comes out of his mouth that can be considered as serious. And this is the presidency of the United States. And I can actually count more things that he said true than he said false. And we shouldn't play this game anymore, because this is going to cost us lives. We have North Korea lobbing missiles now. And if the president of the United States cannot be believed and taken seriously at his word, then we are in a very serious constitutional crisis.
I think he actually said it opposite of what he meant, but you get the point.
I think the term constitutional crisis is pretty decent. You realize that why this is a constitutional crisis or perhaps doesn't rise to that level, but it gets us into some pretty serious constitutional turf. The president of the United States has tremendous power, maybe the most powerful person in the world. And the fear, of course, is that a wrong-headed person in that position could abuse the office and surround himself with people who are willing to facilitate those abuses and commit crimes. That is, with you know, it's troublesome and unsettling to think about, but it is, you know, the fear, obviously, that people have, and the fear that, you know, was realized at least to some extent in the Nixon presidency, perhaps in the Reagan presidency with Iran-Contra, you know, some other things. So yeah, this is serious stuff. But there's another part of it. If a sitting president accuses his predecessor of committing crimes, of that those most serious of violations of the rule of law, specific laws, the Constitution. Once you've made that assertion as a sitting president about your predecessor, if it's not true, if you have no evidence to sustain it, and if you're unwilling to back off from it, if you hold to it even when you're challenged, and remember, we give Trump the space here. If he had said, you know, on Sunday, wow, I read an article on the internet, and I just wasn't thinking, and I was wrong, and I apologize. You give him that space. But if he and his administration, now his Secretary of Homeland Security, his press secretary, and others, continue to push this issue, they are accusing, from the bully pulpit of the White House, they're accusing Barack Obama of an exceptionally serious crime.
Well,
there ought to be consequences. No, there ought to be consequences for that.
I would hope so. Here, this is from...
You know, if there's consequences for the crime, there ought to be consequences for a president using his position to accuse someone of it.
This is from Morning Joe today.
For information he already has.
I think there's a separation of powers aspect here, as I mentioned to Jonathan, that we think it's...
Talk about resources and time. Why waste that?
Well, it's not a question of waste it. It's a question of appropriateness.
Can the president just ask the FBI director?
I think.
Has he asked him?
No, the president has not.
Do you believe that President Obama?
I get that that's a cute question to ask. My job is to represent the president and to talk about what he's doing and what he wants.
Okay, this is surreal. This is like a group of third graders have taken over the White House. I'm not talking about Sean. Sean has got to speak for the third grader that's taken over the White House. And if he gets really mad, then the third grader will spill his apple juice on the Oval Office carpet and will fire him. But no, come on. This is surreal. It is really surreal. You have the Justice Department that has the answer to this question. This is how it would work. Hey, Mr. Attorney General.
Yes.
Could you check and see whether President Obama wiretapped Trump Tower? Or if the
Yes, hold on a second. No, he didn't.
That's it. But yet they're calling for a congressional investigation.
So people
Why
are, gonna
are they calling
time?
For a congressional investigation? Because they know he's lying. Sean Spicer knows he's lying. The president knows he's lying. Everybody in Congress knows he's lying. The world knows he's lying. And in fact, Republicans themselves are saying, don't waste our time. All you have to do, who ran the Benghazi investigation? Trey Gowdy. Trey
yeah.
Gowdy said, all you got to do is pick up the phone and call your own attorney general, and he will tell you it never happened.
Well, a lot of people are, using the word lying in conjunction with Donald Trump.
Folks are piling on. I like the imitation of Sessions.
Yeah, wasn't that something?
That's a special addition to the analysis. Look, these are lies. I mean, and I think it's important to understand that this administration has made it official policy to lie. And of all the stuff you just played there, that whole montage, all those elements of it, last, 5 minutes here, the most chilling thing is when a reporter asked Sean Spicer, do you believe the president? Right? And he says, well, my job is to represent what the president says. Do you understand? He is saying, if I believe the president's lying, I will still perpetuate that lie. I will not serve my country, the Constitution, the taxpayers, the public interest, the public good. Nothing will go before my service to Donald Trump.
And Donald Trump doesn't pay Sean Spicer. The American people do.
And Sean Spicer swears no oath to Donald Trump.
Right.
Right? I mean, the fact of the matter is, I mean, admittedly, I'm not sure press secretaries swear oaths to any great sense, but they have them standing there in the office with those pictures and everything. One assumes, and I like to assume, and I, in fact, I'll go a step further. I do assume that someone who is serving in the executive branch of the government serves not just the president, but the country, and does so under the purview or under the extension, if you will, of that commitment by presidents to serve the Constitution, do good by the country. And when you say what Sean Spicer said there, you are absolutely at odds with that premise. And I understand that, it is not to suggest, I'm not naive, that Donald Trump is first president has lied, or that Sean Spicer is the first press secretary has lied. I wouldn't suggest that. But to make it explicit, to be that formal about it, this is why I'm very comfortable with the use of the word impeachment. And I know a lot of people still struggle to wrap their heads around it and get at peace with it. But at some point, this has got to stop, right? And it has to be stopped via the constitutional structures, the constitutional remedies that this country developed at its founding.
Well, let us not forget that this man's political career started with a lie about Barack Obama. So this should be no surprise to anyone.
Well, you know the biggest lie that was told in the last couple of days. I mean, well, I shouldn't say biggest, a competitor for the biggest. Was that Spicer did his press conference and when they were rolling out the health care plan, said this is the health care plan that the American people demanded. It's not.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation, thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.